placing our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is your friend Prem from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Brother Sai Prakash. But as Vishu told you, that we also have a special guest with us, as we have had many times before. But I don't have the trouble of introducing the guest today, because Vishu just did the job for me, because whom we are having on the show today is Brother Sonam Gyamso, who spoke in the last part of the Bhajan Tutor. We all know Sonam sir as a brilliant composer of bhajans and wonderful singer, mellifluous singer. But we hope to introduce to you the other side of him, because he has been a person who has been a very keen student of Swami's message. And that is the wisdom we would like to draw upon in this show. So on behalf of all of you, let me welcome Brother Sonam to the program. Sai Ram sir, and a very warm welcome to you.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram sir, it's such a pleasure having you here. And I'm just mentioning this to our listeners. As we have seen through the series, many people whom we have just invited out of just Swami's inspiration, we just meet and it's just Swami's will. We go and speak to somebody and we say, sir, can you come and participate in this program? Yeah. We are doing a program like this. And most of the people whom we have requested have told one statement which is in common. They said, that year summer course was very special to me.
1990. Yeah.
So we are doing this series of discourses from the 1990 summer course, and many people whom we have bumped into, I can remember Rangarajan sir,
yes,
Bhagya
sir,
Prabhakar Rao sir, and many people whom we have just, they said that particular series was very special to me. And
Mrs.
I think Mrs. Pani Banda, right. Because auntie was saying how this series has, you know, formed the basis of the syllabus for many of the Balvikas and youth group, what they teach the youth and Balvikas group. And when I was speaking to you, I had no idea that this series was special, very special even for you. Would you mind?
Because that was one summer course.
Yes.
Where I attended the summer course, not as a student,
but
Swami is always in all his compassion. He appointed me, made me a guest lecturer.
Wow.
So it was really special for me.
That's amazing. And you were there all through the summer course. And you heard Swami actually giving these invaluable discourses.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the energy in the hall would have been so high, and the students would have been so inspired when they heard Bhagwan's message. What did you feel at that time? What was your reaction to the way Swami was giving his discourses, and what were you experiencing at that time?
Well, Sai Prakash, the 1990 summer course was very important, very significant also, because that was almost the last summer course wherein we had so many students from everywhere participating in the summer course.
Okay.
And then a galaxy of wonderful speakers, erudite scholars coming and addressing the students. But then, like in the preceding years, every summer course was special for me because, you know, one way because of our participation and Swami's total indulgence in the summer course. And then Swami's highlighting crowning moment used to be everyone waiting for Swami to speak in the evening. But that year, somehow I felt and I feel that the summer course was on, especially on the quintessence of life, what we are supposed to do in life. Are we supposed to only cater to this body? Like Swami was so beautifully telling us that ahar, nidra, bhai, maithun. These are very common things that everyone does. Every living organism, they do this for. But then the humankind, we are the only people who are endowed with jnana.
Correct.
So if you don't utilize that, then you are as bad or as anybody, like any other
animal.
That's what Swami said. The whole quintessence was like, the essence of the discourse was that we have to realize that we are not this body, mind and intellect. We are beyond that. You are the Atma. And you are the child of immortality and bliss. That's what Swami was telling.
Correct. And the way we have spoken about it many times in this show, the way he has come about this whole, he has deduced it from by way of eliminating one by one.
Yeah.
He say that, okay, you are not the body, you are not the senses, you are not the mind. Yeah. And why you are not the body? Why you are not only the body? You're not only the, eliminates each one and then brings you to the state of Atma.
No,
I'm sure, and these 16 discourses, we are in, right now in the 14th one, are really unbelievable. And like every discourse of Bhagwan, but this, since it has come in this flow, and you had the opportunity to be a guest lecturer in this summer course, I would like to ask you, what was your topic? What did you speak on?
I spoke on Buddhism. Mm-hmm. As we had learned from Swami.
Okay.
Okay. And when it comes to Buddhism, like Swami showed me various facets of Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
because people were till that time
mm-hmm.
under the impression that Buddhism is almost taken to be a Nastic Dharma.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the world. And this is unfortunately how it is taught in the schools.
Oh.
But then Swami said, how could it be Nastic?
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the anatma bhav that Buddha spoke about. The anatma bhav, mm-hmm. then Swami told me the story
mm-hmm.
of how Buddha had to speak about the anatma mm-hmm. because there were these panchabhadiyas.
Okay.
So they went to test whether mm-hmm. the Buddha was a genuine, you know, enlightened soul, enlightened
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought that the measuring yardstick was the belief in atma.
Oh.
So if he conforms to the existence of the Atma, we will follow him.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't,
mm-hmm.
then we will just think that he is fake.
Oh.
So they went to Buddha.
Uh-huh.
So Swami said, this is the biggest mistake that human beings commit when they are in close association with a very highly elevated soul. Instead of learning things, we end up asking wrong questions.
Correct.
Yes, so many times Swami would tell us, that when I ask you if you have any doubt, don't think that it is a seminar session wherein if you don't ask a question, you will lose your mark. So you have to ask a question. It's not that. So there Swami said, when these people accosted the enlightened being, Buddha, that is there Atma?
Mm-hmm.
Then Buddha, according to Swami, replied back, like he questioned back, you tell me what is the Atma because you seem to know. I never even thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
You should tell me what is the Atma.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, Atma must be happiness, joy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bhagwan Buddha said, if Atma is happiness,
mm-hmm.
how much happiness do you really experience every day?
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy all the time?
Mm-hmm.
They said, no.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to be very matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
They said, Atma, we are happy once in a while, but then there are sad moments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Buddha said, and then Swami, in his own beautiful way, said that Buddha said that pleasure is an interval between two pains. So now you should understand that if Atma is happiness, unhappiness, misery must be anatma. So the anatma is more tangible and cognizable, like you can understandable, than the Atma, which is so abstract.
Correct.
Happiness is so abstract. So why don't you start your premises on anatma, which is unhappiness, because most of the time you are unhappy. So you know what is unhappy. Unhappiness. So the moment you think about the misery around you, the whole world, the whole universe, your heart is filled with compassion. And when the heart is filled with compassion, that compassionate heart is, according to Bhagwan Baba, he said, that is what Buddha said, that is the Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva is one who has cultivated a compassionate heart.
Okay.
So when you have a compassionate heart, you are a potential Buddha. You are a Buddha in the making. So Swami said, so he said, first you think about anatma, that will lead you to atma, maybe. If you are very diligent in your pursuit. So that is how Buddha spoke about anatma, but these people went around and said that Buddha doesn't seem to believe in the atma, he talks about anatma. So down the generations, down history now, people believed that Bhagwan Buddha did not really confirm the existence of the atma, so that became anatma. Then Swami said, you know, the very crux of Buddhism is prajna and upaya.
Okay.
And what is prajna? He said, whole of Vedanta is about prajna. Prajnanam dhamma, Swami said. So when Buddha confirms the beauty of the of prajna, the importance of prajna as the ultimate achievement, then why don't you believe that prajna is Brahma? So he believed in the Brahma. He was teaching them Brahman only. The existence of a permanent entity, a principle, which is universal.
Correct.
This is where there is a dichotomy. This is what Swami said. This is only one of those small, you know, facets of what I learned from Swami directly. So during the summer course, one of the highlighting features of the summer camp was, summer course was, Swami suddenly said there should be a debate.
Okay.
Right.
And the debate was, you know, the subject was so important, so interesting, gripping in fact. Swami said it should be not among the students, but I want my teachers to sit on the So Anandapur campus and men's campus, Vrindavan and Puttaparthi, Prashanti Nilayam campus. And the subject matter was individual free will vis-a-vis absolute will.
Correct.
So the sum and substance was that ultimately Swami asked, is there a thing like individual free will? Just because you are free to roam around,
correct,
free to really cater to your senses, can you call that freedom? Swami said, that is not freedom at all. Freedom is the freedom of enjoying bliss. Bliss is freedom. Anything which is not bliss is not at all freedom. It's bondage. This is what Swami said.
Correct.
In fact, you know, one of the very beautiful statements which Swami gives as a cornerstone for his students is that where he says that you should have the head of Shankara, heart of Buddha, and the hands of Janaka. Explaining that one, Swami, one of the devotees were telling that if you look at the three personalities which Swami is drawing examples from, Shankara was the one who is absolutely intellectual. He wanted to codify whatever was the knowledge which was around. He wanted to technically deal with whatever knowledge was available.
Yeah.
If you look at Buddha, he was the one, as Sir was beautifully saying that Swami had revealed, that he tried to reach the Brahman through his compassion.
Yeah.
Whatever was his state of mind, his heart was filled with compassion. So Swami said, have the head of Shankara, have the clarity and intellect of Shankara, but have the heart of Buddha. And then Swami says, the hands of Janaka. Because Janaka was a very diligent king. He was a very successful king who went into details and ruled his kingdom well. But still, his mind was fixed on the Atman. So all these three, Swami says, are people who reach that same Brahman in a different
you know, ways. Yeah.
And Swami said, I want you to be, you know, the culmination of all these three.
Seemingly different, but it's a culmination.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. Even Nisargadatt Maharaj in his book, he says, you think it is freedom for the right to do anything. That is not freedom, that is bondage. The right to do the right thing, the freedom that you have to do the right thing, that is actual freedom.
Yes.
He said, so what you have to do is the right thing, and that is the freedom, that is the actual freedom. And I think this was in the previous chapter when we were about freedom.
What
it was
is
about
freedom?
What is the previous chapter in the summer course?
Yeah.
And Swami even refers to this debate that you are talking about. And very nicely there, finally Swami comes, you can actually be free only at the state of the hridayam, at the state of the heart.
Oh.
And he says, hridayam is you seeing unity in everybody. That's what Swami. And this particular discourse, starting with practice and precept, it's like, as we discussed earlier, we have done Shravanam and Mananam, now this is Nididhyasanam. You start putting it to practice, what I've been saying. And here he starts, he says, the impermanence of worldly knowledge, or the inadequacy of worldly knowledge. And he says, animals also have charma chakshu, the physical eyes, but what you really need to have is the eye of wisdom. And he goes on to this powerful segment where Swami actually tells it so lovingly, to realize God is his foremost task in life, and man must realize God, feel God, see God, and talk to God. This is realization, this is religion. These words he actually speaks in English, so clear, so beautiful. So,
can I just interrupt here?
Yes.
I wouldn't call it interruption. But then continuing from there, when it you know, this is religion.
Correct.
What a powerful statement.
Mm.
Like, you know, nowhere in at any point of time in history has any seer taught mankind the essence of religion this way,
correct,
in this manner.
Correct.
Because everywhere, a religion is nothing but an ism, a set of dogmas, doctrines, practices, you know. But then, Swami has given the most succinct definition of religion in the parlance of, you know, dharma.
I think that is one of the things which has changed for all of us after coming to Swami.
Definitely.
You know, a relationship which you have with divinity.
Yeah.
Something like you go to when you are in need, some being which you praise to get something.
Exactly.
I think that has changed. The Swami would say love for love's sake.
Yeah.
That concept has been introduced to us after we came to Swami.
Exactly.
I feel, you know, that is one of the great, and when Swami says that is religion.
To personalize God. And
right.
Feel Him every moment, feel God every moment.
Correct.
Even at a very dualistic plane, feeling God, then being God, of course.
You're reminded of what Swami told one of our lecturers. Except Swami called him for an interview, and in the interview Swami asked him, do you want to lead a spiritual life? He said, would you like to lead a spiritual life? Saying that if you want, I'll grant you that. And this person said, no, Swami, I'm not interested. He said, I'm seeing you every day. We have so much love for you. You are loving us. And whatever we do it to please you. I don't want a spiritual life. For me, this is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, is there a life more spiritual than this?
So
correct.
Swami said, you're already leading a spiritual life.
That's what this is another incident which is quoted by Srimati Karunamba, who has written that beautiful book, Shri Satya Sai Anandadai.
Okay.
So in that, in fact, when we were interviewing her, she was mentioning that her mother was very fond of this pujas and rituals and all that. She wanted to do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And Swami was keeping them busy even in the Patu Mandir days to get the place arranged, clean the place, cook for the devotees who are coming. So they were involved in seva all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes she would really sit back and think, what is my spiritual sadhana? What am I doing? And Swami was keeping them busy all the time. And right at that time, maybe in the late 40s or early 50s, late 40s, because 50s Swami shifted to this mandir, two devotees came from Ramana Ashram.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sent by Ramana Maharishi. And they came here and they happened to meet Karunamba's mother. And they just asked her casually, what sadhana do you do? And there she got very, very disheartened and she said, I'm doing nothing but sweeping the floor. I'm doing nothing but cooking food for the devotees who come. I'm doing nothing else. I'm not doing any spiritual sadhana. And she was feeling very bad. And then Swami came at the right moment and Swami told them, don't ask any of these things to these people. They have finished all those stages, so they have come to me.
So profound.
And whatever they are doing, any act that I tell them to do, and whatever they are doing, that is the sadhana. Nothing more than that. He told them, you just... And that's what Swami always told us, as students, as teachers in the university. He says, just follow the routine, what I have set for you in the hostel. He would always say that to the students. And he has himself set the routine in the hostel. You just follow that, that's it. Sometimes you think, Swami, it can't be so simple.
We think that it cannot be so simple. It needs to be a little more complicated than that.
So that's how I think Swami is going on in this discourse. And before he concluded last time, there was this very powerful concept of the doership and enjoyership. Kartrutva and Bhoktrutva. So he says you should give up that.
I think before that, you know, talking about devotion, Swami makes this very beautiful point here, where he says, you know, deha virakti,
correct,
can be got by deva asakti. So when you get attached to God, the body consciousness just drops.
Correct.
And then he says, you know, deha branti is gone, and moksha prapti you get.
Moksha prapti.
Correct.
Beautiful. Bandha vimochana and moksha prapti, Swami says. He says it will automatically happen if you concentrate on making this bond with God strong, the other things will just drop away.
Here again, Swami is mentioning in the debate that took place day before yesterday. It was argued that one has freedom. He says, you think you have freedom to eat. Whenever I'm hungry, I want to eat. But it's your hunger that is driving you to eat. So you are a slave to your hunger. you are not free. Yeah. That's what exactly. In fact, I remember the discourse on freedom where Swami says, even if you want to help, even if you want to help, you are under the influence of your sattva guna.
Mm-hmm.
You are not even free. You are not free from your sattva guna.
You are not a gunatit.
Yeah, you are not gunatit.
Yeah.
And you know, in the Gita, I was just reading this shloka, very beautifully Krishna says, sattva guna is, you are contained by the, you know, thirst, or you are contained by your thirst for knowledge. Sattva guna is defined by your thirst for knowledge. Even that is binding.
Mm.
So of course, rajas and tamas. Rajas is bound by action, and tamas is sloth and this thing. But sattva, he says, even the you know, the urge to learn more, acquire more knowledge is binding.
In a sense, you know, that is what happens in the life of Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you listen to this title of this thing, it says practice and precept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he stood for that. He went out. He said, "I want to find out what it is." He goes through everything, you know, he goes through that starvation, the period of deprivation and self-abnegation, and then he says that, no, this cannot be because it is not giving me that inner joy. And then he says that I have found it in moderation, that I have practiced it, I have found it, you know, practically, and I am teaching you what I have found.
Correct.
And that is the thing, it comes with your own experience of finding out what it is.
Yeah, reaching out.
Right, because we often think, you know, I'm a devotee, I should fast. You know, I am devoted to Swami, so I have to reduce these things, I have to do these things, I have to contain myself. It is right to an extent.
And many times we would say that, I must do this to please God, to please Bhagwan. And I just still remember one evening when we were all flocking around the Ganesh, there was a, used to be a Ganesh statue, remember, in front of the Mandir.
Mandir, right. Yes.
So, Swami would invariably come on the balcony and give darshan. So, that was one occasion when everybody said, Swami, we are very happy. And Swami's birthday was around the bend. Everybody saying, Swami, happy birthday. Swami said, every time you keep wishing me happy, happy, I'm always happy. Then Swami said, are you happy? Then at that point of time, and then this realization came to me a little bit later. Everyone said, yes, Swami, we are happy. Then Swami said, then I am also happy. Then the realization came to me, you know, what was it? At that point of time, people who were just standing there, they were all speaking the truth. At least at that, during that frozen moment, you know. Because no one could be otherwise in the presence of Bhagwan, who was bestowing so much grace from the balcony. Everybody was really happy. We had forgotten ourselves. So we said, genuinely, Swami, we are happy. And then Swami said, I am also happy. Just a reflection. So if I am doing anything, practicing anything, or, you know, it's my penance or whatever, is for my own happiness, not for him.
That's what happened even in Hatshi, as I think I've mentioned it before. Because on that dining table, actually Swami was not physically told anything, but Swami wanted to go for a round in the car, and he wanted to actually go to the fields where they had the fields, and he just wanted to go for a round. And so when he went, as he was coming back, he asked, what are these huge shamianas you have put up? Then they said, the Jadav brothers, they said, Swami, this is for your devotees. When they come, we have served prasad here. Oh, is it? And Swami was so happy on the dining table. He said, I don't want to eat. I am full. He said, they have served my devotees. They have given prasad every day to my devotees. I don't want anything else. I am full.
So that's something which we've always observed with Swami. When there's a huge group of devotees which have come for any particular festival, you can be absolutely sure Swami goes once to that group and gives them Pad Namaskar, comes back. Whether they are happy or not, Swami will be so happy.
Exactly.
So blissful. And as students, I know, we used to think that that is the time if you want to put any prayer to Swami, Swami will definitely answer you, as if you want to give a letter and ask
because
for something.
He's in a good mood,
Swami is very happy, you know, and it's happened so many times. Swami will be bubbling with joy when he has distributed some clothes to some devotees or given some sweets. Swami will come beaming. You know, it's something which we have witnessed. We could see Swami's face glow with that happiness.
Even when Swami materializes something and gives to somebody,
Swami.
Right. Swami is so thrilled. Swami says, you saw that? How is it? So he gives it. So he makes it so special for the person.
I think my classmates, when they were in 10th or something, Swami materialized a huge diamond ring in their interview. 10th class interview, as used to have. I think Swami said it was the Kohinoor, and Swami materialized. The first person to come out of the interview room was Swami. He came out and said, you know what, I showed them the Kohinoor diamond. You know, Swami was reflecting the joy those little children were having. Swami was coming and saying, you know what, it was, I showed them the Kohinoor diamond.
I remember one occasion in the interview room, there was one of our students. He used to just sit in the corner, never show any interest, lackluster type of thing.
Castroil face.
And then Swami said, you have a lot of doubts in your mind, doubting Thomas. What do you want? Tell me. He said, I don't want anything, Swami. Very defiantly he was telling Swami, I don't want anything. Swami said, you must want something. I'll give you a watch. He said, Swami, you are giving watch to everyone. He said, no, no, but this will be special, just say. And then he extended his palm, and right on, he didn't wave his hand, wave his palm as usual. He just extended his palm, and right on top of the palm, we saw molten gold.
On Swami's hand.
Yeah, on Swami's hand.
My God.
And it was really taking shape, metamorphosing into a beautiful Rolex watch. Right in front of us. He not only created, already, you know, made watch, but then he showed us the process of, you know, making that watch. And then he said, take this. And then, of course, the usual watch award action. Swami said that. This guy was so happy. And then Swami said, you should be happy. I am happier than you today, giving you this watch.
Beautiful. You know, that's when, I think a couple of weeks back when we were discussing this particular thing of people used to throw challenges to Swami. Can he materialize the pumpkin? Can he materialize the watermelon? To say that, can he really prove that he's materializing these things in a superhuman sense? Swami would never take the challenge because never was his materialization an act of show.
Yeah.
Though we looked at it as a means of understanding his divinity, for Swami it was always out of love. And the response to a devotee like this who has a doubt and comes to Swami, often if you see, we would come to Swami and say that, Swami, I really want to love you and really want to, you know, give myself to you, but there are some doubts in my mind. And Swami says, yes, I will remove that doubt. You know, there's a conflict within yourself. One part of you wants to believe, one part of you is saying that, no, no, how can you, it's not rational.
Yeah.
Swami addresses that doubt, not every doubting Thomas who comes.
So I think we can go to the first clip for today and see what Swami has to say.
So we played four clips, and this is the fifth clip in that discourse.
విద్యార్థులారా, మీరు తెలిసినటువంటి విషయమే, డియర్ మన పుట్టైన ఉంటుంటారు. డియర్ స్టూడెంట్స్, యు నో దాట్ దెర్ ఈస్ ఏ హైలీ, దాని బలము ఎంతటిదో అనుభవించే వాడికి అర్థమవుతుంది, కానీ అన్యులకు అర్థం కాదు. దెర్ ఈస్ ఎ వెరీ స్ట్రాంగ్ ఎలిఫెంట్, ఓన్లీ పీపుల్ హూ నో హిస్ స్ట్రెంగ్త్ నో. కేవలం ఒక తోకతో కొట్టిందంటే 9 అడుగులు పోయి ముందు పడతాడు. ఇఫ్ ఇట్ కెన్ జస్ట్ whip you with its tail, a man can be thrown 9 feet away. Such is the strength of an elephant.
Kani balaheenudainatundi mauta tana ankusham chetulo pattukunnappudu taanu cheppinattu vintundi ee enugu.
But the master of the elephant controls it with a small piece of iron and makes it listen to his word absolutely implicitly.
Vaani balamenta, enugu balamenta.
What is the strength of this master compared to the elephant's strength?
Thana yokka shakti aa yenuku teliyadu.
But the poor elephant does not know its own strength.
Shakti unnadi,
it has strength,
kaani teliyakapotam chetane aa alpuniki swalpudainatunte vaani yokka chethilo adi anigamaligi untundadi.
But as it is not aware of its own strength, it has subjected itself to mastery by a very small
meeku baaga telusunu b tummeda.
You also know the example here is a bee.
Ee tummeda segubarinatvanti oka kathinamainatvanti karanaina tulusukoni lopana praveshistundi.
This bee can enter into a very hard wood by making a hole.
Inta kathinamainatvanti karanu kodanu tulusi lopana poyeyatvanti oka shakti unnatvanti ee oka tummeda.
This bee, which has got the strength to make hole and get into a very hard...
అతి సున్నితమైనటువంటి ఒక కమలములో ప్రవేశించినప్పుడు కమల రేఖలు అన్ని చేరిపోయినప్పుడు దాని నుంచి బంధింపబడి తన శక్తిని తాను మరచి అందులోనే మరణిస్తుంది.
When it enters into a lotus flower, when the petals come and close, it gives up its life, not being aware of its own strength.
తన శక్తి తనకు తెలియదు.
It does not know its own strength.
అదే విధముగానే మానవుడు తనలో ఉండేటువంటి ఆనందము, తనలో ఉన్నటువంటి దివ్యత్వము, తనలో ఉన్నటువంటి పవిత్రతను తాను గుర్తించుకోవడానికి తగినటువంటి ప్రయత్నం చేయటం లేదు. చేయకపోయినప్పటికీ చెప్పినటువంటి వారి మాటలను విశ్వసించటం లేదు.
ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే ద మ్యాన్, ఆల్దో హీ హాస్ గాట్ ఆల్ ద బ్లిస్, ఆల్ ద డివినిటీ, ఆల్ ద సేక్రెడ్నెస్ ఇన్ హిమ్, హీ డస్ నాట్ నో.
తగినటువంటి కృషి చేసినప్పుడు తప్పక ఈ సత్యాన్ని మీరు అనుభవిస్తారు.
ఇఫ్ ఓన్లీ యూ మేక్ ఎన్ ఎఫర్ట్, యూ విల్ రియలీ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్.
ఈ సత్యం చేసి తప్పక మీరు ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవిస్తారు.
బై దిస్ ట్రూత్ యూ విల్ ఆల్సో ఎంజాయ్ ద డివైన్ బ్లెస్.
కస్తూరి మృగము, అది ఒక రకమైన డియర్.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అ మస్క్ డియర్.
ఇంకా
ఇట్ ఈస్ అ మస్క్ డియర్.
అది అప్పుడప్పుడు తన నుండి కూడాను ఒక సుగంధం అనేటువంటిది ఆవిర్భవిస్తుంటారు.
సమ్ టైమ్స్ ఇట్ గెట్స్ ద స్మెల్ విచ్ ఇస్ ఫ్రాగ్రెంట్.
తన యొక్క నాభి నుండి పుట్టుంటారు.
ఇట్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇట్స్ నేవల్.
ఆ యొక్క సుగంధాన్ని తాను అనుభవిస్తుండాలి.
ఇట్ ఎంజాయ్స్ దట్ ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్.
ఎక్కడి నుంచి వస్తుండదు ఈ సుగంధం అని చెప్పని అడవంతా తిరుగుతుంది.
నాట్ నోయింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ దిస్ ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్ ఎమినేట్స్, ఇట్ గోస్ ఇన్ సర్చ్ ఆఫ్ ద ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్ ఎవ్రీవేర్ ఇన్ ద ఫారెస్ట్.
కట్టగడపటి అడవంతా తిరిగి అలసిపోయి ఒక వృక్షఛాయలో కూర్చొని తాను కొంచెం విశ్రాంతి తీసుకుంటుంది.
ఆఫ్టర్ సర్చింగ్ ఇన్ ది ఎంటైర్ ఫారెస్ట్ ది ప్లేస్ ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ దిస్ ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్ కమ్స్,
విశ్రాంతి తీసుకునే సమయం లోపల తన ముక్కును తన నాభి దగ్గర ఉంచుకుని కొంత విశ్రాంతి కోసమని పవళిస్తుంది.
ఆఫ్టర్ బీయింగ్ టైర్డ్ ఇట్ టేక్స్ రెస్ట్ అండర్ ఎ షేడ్ అండ్ కీప్స్ ఇట్స్ నోస్ నియర్ అండ్
తన నాభి నుంచి వచ్చేటువంటి సుగంధము తాను గుర్తించుకుంటుంది.
దెన్ ఇట్ రియలైజెస్ ద ఫ్రాగ్రెన్స్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్
అయ్యో నేను ఎంత పిచ్చిదానను, నా నుండినే వచ్చినటువంటి ఈ సుగంధాన్ని నేను తెలుసుకునలేక ఈ సుగంధం ఎక్కడున్నదని అడవంతా సంచరించాను, అలసిపోయాను. ఇదే అజ్ఞానం యొక్క తత్వము.
వాట్ ఎ మ్యాడ్ థింగ్ ఐ ఆమ్, నాట్ నోయింగ్ ది ఫ్రేగ్రెన్స్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ మై ఓన్ నేవల్, ఐ సర్చ్ ది ఎంటైర్ ఫారెస్ట్ అండ్ ఐ గాట్ మై సెల్ఫ్ ఎగ్జాస్టెడ్. దిస్ ఇస్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్.
మానవుడు కూడాను అంతే.
సిమిలర్ ఇస్ ద మ్యాన్.
నిత్యానందము, బ్రహ్మానందము, అద్వైతానందం అనేటువంటిది మానవుని యొక్క స్వభావము, స్వరూపము.
The permanent bliss, the divine bliss and the brahmic bliss are all the nature of man.
ee bhasha sambandham entunti, ee bhautika sambandham entunti, ee prakruti sambandham entunti vishayavasanaku lobadi povatam chetane aa divyamaina bhavyamaina navyamaina entunti yokka ee divya tattvana taanu artham chesukolekapothunnadu, anubhavinchalekapothunnadu, ini anveshinchalekapothunnadu.
As man has become a slave of these external objects and temptations, he does not know his own divine nature, his own divine bliss, therefore he has not been able to experience.
Annintikini dehabhimaname moola karanamu.
Attachment to the body and identifying himself with the body is the root cause for all this.
Dehamu pancha bhautikamu.
Physical body is made up of five elements.
Dehamu koolaka tappadu eppudu.
One day or the other it has to form.
Dehi niramayundu.
The indweller is a permanent one.
Dalutippaka dehi chavu puttukal moha nibandha bandhanalu mudranu levu.
He is not subject to birth, death or any such limitation.
Nijambu chuda aa dehiye deva devudu.
Truly speaking, that indweller himself is the god of gods.
Kanuka nijamuga tana yokka aatmane సర్వ విధములైనటువంటి యొక్క మార్గమును మానవులకు అందిస్తూ ఆనందింపచేయుచున్నది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ హిజ్ ఓన్ ఆత్మ విచ్ గివ్స్ మ్యాన్ ఆల్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ జాయ్ అండ్ బ్లిస్.
ఆత్మ నిరంతరము ఆనందమును అందించినే కాని దుఃఖము విచారమనేటువంటిది తనలో ఏమాత్రము లేదు.
ఆత్మ ఆల్వేస్ ఎంజాయ్స్ బ్లిస్ అండ్ జాయ్. ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ నో వాట్ సారో.
పాత్రలో పోసినటువంటి పాయసమును ఈ పాత్రకు ఎన్ని రంధ్రములు కొట్టినా ఏ రంధ్రం నుంచి వచ్చినా గాని పాయసమే వస్తుంది, కానీ మరొక చేదు రాదు.
వెన్ దేర్ ఇస్ ఎ స్వీట్ జ్యూస్ పాయసం ఫిల్డ్ ఇన్ ఎ పర్టికులర్ పాట్, వేర్ ఎవర్ యు స్ట్రైక్ ఎ హోల్ యు గెట్ పాయసం అలోన్ త్రూ దట్ హోల్ ఆర్ ఎనీ నంబర్ ఆఫ్
ఆనందమయము.
దస్ ఆత్మ ఇస్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ బ్లిస్.
కనుకనే ఋషులందరూ కూడాను మొట్టమొదట ఈ ఆత్మకు ఆనందం అని పేరు పెట్టారు.
దట్ ఈస్ వై the sages in the ancient days gave the name for atma.
ఈ ఆనందం అంటే ఎలాంటి ఆనందము? నిత్యానందం.
What type of bliss?
పరమ సుఖదం. కేవలం జ్ఞానమూర్తిం ద్వంద్వాతీతం గగన సదృశం
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ పర్మనెంట్ జాయ్ అండ్ సుప్రీం హ్యాపీనెస్
నిత్యం విమలం అచలం
ఇట్ ఈస్ వన్ అలోన్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ప్యూర్
సర్వదీ సాక్షిభూతం
ఇట్ ఈస్ విట్నెస్ ఫర్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్
భావాతీతం త్రిగుణరహితం
ఇట్ ట్రాన్సెండ్స్ ఆల్ భావాస్ అండ్ ఆల్ క్వాలిటీస్
ఇది ఆత్మస్వరూపం యొక్క ఆత్మస్వభావం యొక్క సరైనటువంటి యొక్క గుర్తులు
దీస్ ఆర్ ద సింబుల్స్ ఆఫ్ ట్రూ ఆత్మ
ఇట్టి ఆనందము ఏనాడు కూడా దుఃఖములు కాని కష్టములు కాని బాధలు కాని విచారములు కాని అందించదు
హౌ కెన్ సచ్ బ్లిస్ ఆఫర్ ఎనీ టైప్ ఆఫ్ ప్రాబ్లమ్ సారో సాడ్నెస్
అట్టి పెన్నిధి మీ సన్నిధినే ఉండగా దుఃఖమును విచారమును కష్టములను కలిగించేటువంటి యొక్క ఈ జగత్తునకై మీరు ఎందుకు ఇంత ఆరాట పడుతున్నారు
వెన్ యువర్ ఓన్ వెరీ నేచర్ ఈజ్ సచ్ బ్లిస్ వై ఆర్ యూ సో మచ్ హ్యాంకరింగ్ ఆఫ్టర్ దిస్ ఓన్లీ డిజైర్ జాయ్ అండ్ హ్యాపీనెస్
దట్ వాజ్ దట్ క్లిప్ అండ్ సో స్వీట్ అండ్ సో పవర్ఫుల్ అట్ ది సేమ్ టైం
టేక్స్ యూ బ్యాక్ ఇన్ టైం
Right, and when you hear Swami's voice and the way he is singing that beautiful Padyam,
yeah.
I don't know which ragam it belonged to, but how beautiful, sir, when Swami was saying here that everything is within, like how you are saying the musk deer and how everything has to be expressed from within. No, I'm sure as a music composer, as one who has composed so many bhajans, I think you will surely agree to this and say how He inspires it through you.
Yeah. In relation to bhajan, so many times Swami would come and correct the students. And then even in that correction, the main focus used to be, you are the Atma.
Oh.
Even in bhajan. In fact, he said that, you know, soulful singing, or singing with lot of bhava, tantamounts to you are believing that you are the Atma. Then only you can sing like that.
Oh.
Otherwise, that bhajan singing is nirarthak, useless. Oh. Once, what happened was, I remember two or three such occasions. You know, there was a bhajan called Atma Me Bas Jao Baba.
Okay.
So we were singing that bhajan. Somebody started that in the mandir. Swami just ran inside the bhajan hall and stopped it. He said, what do you mean, Dona Potu? You are the Atma. How can you sit on the Atma? Atma mein bas jao, Baba. How can I sit on you? Another such instance was, and it's so profound and beautiful. There used to be a bhajan once upon a time. And you know, those were the times when people were allowed to come and sing bhajan.
Devotees.
Good composers, devotees could come and sing bhajan. So there was one gentleman from Bengal. So, there was a bhajan which was very popular in Bengal. So, he sang here. And that was, I think, only time I have heard that song being sung here. Sada bhajo sai ram, nirdhan ko de daan, aham ko do balidaan. Something like this. Bhajan goes on like that. Swami said, aham is, how can you sacrifice aham? Aham is aham brahmasmi, Swami said. He's teaching this man standing there in Purnachanda auditorium. Aham is, I don't know what was the occasion, but it was a big function, and this gentleman was singing this bhajan. And Swami is telling, aham is correct. Aham is Brahma. But aham kar is wrong, Swami said. Aham plus akar is wrong. So identifying the aham with the body. Akar, the body, then all the concomitants of the body come in a sweep. You know, all the ego and everything comes along with the body. So mind also comes, intellect also comes, senses, all these. So you are singing bhajan to go beyond that. So that's what Swami was telling that day. I still remember.
In fact, there's another bhajan also which Swami corrected, I think. Jai Jai Bhavani Ma. The initial composition was Atmani Vasima. Swami said, what is this Atmani Vasima? How can God be the indweller in the Atma? Yeah. Atma is divine. So that's why it was changed to Hridayani Vasima instead of Atmani Vasima. No, Swami is very clear of what he, you know, even lost in music and devotion, you cannot make that mistake.
That's Swami. Sir, but as Swami is telling the first part of this clip, I was just thinking of, you will definitely have experiences where the bhajan just came from within. And you are actually just an instrument.
Yeah, my experience, and I have really shared notes with a lot of people who have been receiving bhajans.
Mm-hmm.
And they all say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am a recipient of the bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
This has been my, it's no mock humility here.
Mm.
100%, one moment, I was really empty of any idea or anything. The next moment, he gives you a bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are the first recipient. The only difference is I am receiving and learning the bhajan for the first time. And then it is passed on.
Beautiful.
So we have done nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were moments wherein I exerted all my ego, 100% my doership. And I said that I am going to compose a bhajan. And then nothing really happens. You know, one classic example, just recent, just 2-3 years back, Brother Abhimanyu Kaul had written a song. And for our first jam, the song was to be tuned. He had sent it to me, he had mailed it to me. I sat with the harmonium, total exertion of my ego, that I have to somehow compose that song because we have to sing it on 1st January. And then I tried so many days, nothing happened. And then ultimately, I was really on the point of desperation because I was coming to Puttaparthi and Abhimanyu would demand that song. We had to sing that song. And then I came by train and overnight I had to stay in Vishakhapatnam, stayed in a hotel. The next morning, I had to, that day in the afternoon, I had to catch Prashanti Express. In the morning, I kept the song on my pillow after my prayer. And I prayed to Bhagwan that I really, Swami, please give me a tune, Swami. Please tune this song, Swami. And the next 10 to 15 minutes, the song was tuned. And I just came, brought the song here, and we have recorded it in our alumni album also.
Okay.
Dil ye gungunaye, aankhe muskuraye, diwana hua dil. So it was composed like that. I remember a person like Devanath Mukherjee, I have narrated it earlier also. Swami comes, you know, in his dream at 3 o'clock in the morning and says that write down the song immediately when you wake up and write the song. Swami taught him the whole song and said, you wake up and write it down, you'll forget. And that song was Giridhari Lal Shyam Gopal. Natavara Lal Madana Gopal. It's such a simple bhajan. The, you know, the profundity of Satya Sai bhajan is a simplicity. Just 4 short lines and contains the whole world there.
In fact, even as you're saying, that's a reminder of another, one more beautiful bhajan.
Yeah.
Mana Bangaru Patti Baba.
Mana Bangaru Patti.
That was also received in that manner. There was one bhajan singer in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
He was known as the composer of this bhajan. When somebody went and asked him, sir, how did you compose this bhajan? He said, I did not compose. One day in my dream, Swami came one night. And there he heard Swami singing this bhajan. He said, Swami, this bhajan is so sweet. I want to learn this. Then Swami taught him the bhajan. Swami told, you wake up now, write it down. Then you go back to sleep. I'll come and teach you the tune. No. That is what I think, you know, experiences like this, of course, we're sharing it this way. But it strengthens that belief that this Swami whom we're loving is actually really in us.
In us, and we are that Swami.
We are that Swami.
Correct. Yeah. That's the ultimate.
Ultimately. I just, here I would like to, otherwise I'll forget. You know, once Swami said this to the students, that the very essence of Shikshavali, Swami said, and Swami said, you don't forget this, commit it to your memory. Aham Vrikshashya Reriva Kirti Prishtam Gireriva. This one, Swami just said, narrated the whole thing, and then Swami went on to tell the story, tell the meaning. And then he said, when are you going to make this statement, your statement? when are you going to make it true to for you? Because it is not only Trishanku. You are all Trishankus.
Mm. What is the meaning of that sentence, sir?
Aham Vrikshasya Reriva. Means that I am the one who stimulates this whole universe, you know, the tree of this universe.
Mm. Okay.
Kirti Krishtam Gireriva.
Mm.
My kirti, what do you say in...
glory.
My glory. So my glory is higher than the highest mountain.
Mountains.
That's the highest spire of the highest mountain.
Urdhva
Pavitro Vajani Va Swamritam Asmi. So, you know, it is not adho, but urdhva. So, you know,
upward.
Yeah, upward and immortal. That's what I am. Dravinagum savarsasam. So I am the holder. I contain all the wealth, all the most expensive, all the wealth of this whole universe. Sumedha Amritokshitaha Iti Trishankur Vedana Vajanam. So Sumedha is that the immortal knowledge, the wisdom. So I am filled with that wisdom. So the day you realize that and you make that statement, that will be the final statement of your life, Swami said. Because beyond that you won't speak. And I still remember in 1979 when I was in my 12th standard in Vrindavan.
Okay.
Suddenly, you know, some 900 teachers from all over Andhra Pradesh, primary school teachers, they were, they came to Prashanti Nilayam, came to Vrindavan, at the behest of the Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh, who had prayed to Bhagwan, and then Swami said, I'll train them up. Now, these were the most unruly people I have ever seen in my life. Like, they would spit anywhere, they would, you know, be all the time noisy and talking, very boisterous. And then we thought that how is Swami going to tame these people? It just took 9 days for these people to be tamed. And the elements of that, the taming session, you know, the training session, some of the elements were like this. One day Swami in his discourse, suddenly, at that point of time, how would we realize that Swami was giving a beautiful exposition of the Bhrigavalli? But that Swami narrated a story. That story was the Vrigavalli. Can you imagine when we chant Vrigavalli and go to somebody, some pandit, he would make it so complex, so difficult. And Swami is just telling a story, you know, there was once upon a time a mendicant, and his name was Vrigu, and he had his father, his name was Varun. And early in the morning, it was so beautiful, crisp morning, and then you know, mild breeze was blowing, and then he suddenly felt inspired. So he went to his father, and then he said, Father, please tell me, what is happiness? What is Brahman? Please teach me what is Brahman. And then Swami went on to say about the panchakoshas and all that, ultimately. And we were too, at that time, too young to understand all that. But then it took me so many years, and then kept reflecting on that discourse of Bhagwan. And then it became so more and more and more profound, as my understanding of it became more profound, you know. So, Swami was telling about, ultimately, Anandam Brahmetivya Janat. That was the statement. And then after he realized that he is Anandam, then he didn't go back to his father. And the father also sat very, you know, quietly and very happy and satisfied that my son has ultimately reached me.
Beautiful.
So that Swami had said, and I just now it, when I was listening to this discourse of Bhagwan, then all those things, you know, come to your mind, and how beautifully every moment, every time, without sparing any moment, Swami has been telling
constantly us teaching us the same thing. And
even this part where Swami is telling that all the joy is within you, all the knowledge is within you. We used to think, you know, we also speak, you know, we try to talk about Swami's message. What is the difference when Swami spoke his message and when we are trying to talk of it? One clear difference is another friend of mine and myself were sitting and talking. How was Swami able to put it forth so strongly? It is only that Swami is absolutely convinced it's within you. When I try to explain a concept to somebody, I am trying to teach something which he doesn't know. But when Swami is explaining something, he is explaining it with the full conviction with which he is speaking here. He is saying that it is in you. I am just trying to bring it out and show it to you. And that makes all the difference, that power with which Swami gives.
This is exactly what Swami said to John Hislop, Dr. Mm-hmm. John Hislop, there in the portico.
Mm-hmm.
He asked Swami, Swami, how is it? Exactly this question. Swami, how is it that when we go and tell the whole world about you, people don't really readily get convinced? And when you speak, even when you don't speak, people are already convinced. In your presence, they just leave behind all their inhibitions and then they, you know, take a plunge forward. How is it, Swami? Swami said, so simple, Hislop. You are not convinced, I am convinced, Swami said. Just this one sentence.
Beautiful. You know, that really explains, how else would you explain some of these devotees here from foreign countries who don't understand even a word of what Swami spoke?
Yeah.
When Swami spoke in Telugu, they won't understand the Telugu. When the translation was in English, some of them don't even understand the English. But still that devotion to leave whatever they have in their country and come here, sit for months together. If it was not this what Swami was telling, that confidence and that his ability to reach out with that confidence, I think really it must be only that.
Beautiful.
And you know, even as Swami was telling that first part here, talking about that elephant, I cannot help but refer to Sai Gita. We've spoken so much about her. Today was the day in which we remembered her. There was this beautiful incident somebody was sharing, that one day when everybody was sitting around the mandir, that time people used to stay around Swami's mandir.
Yeah.
It's just small tents and put things around and stay. Suddenly there was so much of havoc and they saw Sai Gita is running all around the place. She came running from her place and running all around mandir. So people got really scared and they're wondering, what if she tramples on somebody? So they all moved. And running around, she went straight to mandir and it was like she was calling out to Swami. So then Swami came to her and said, what happened, Sai Gita? What happened? What happened? And she so beautifully bowed down and showed her ear. And behind her ear, she had a wound. Apparently, the mahout had actually hit her in a way in which that she had sustained that wound. And the devotee was saying that this was quite commonly happening, because Swami would call different mahouts and those people used to keep changing. Some of them were not treating her properly. But every time, Sai Gita would come running to Swami and complain. She would never do anything to that person. You know, even though she had that strength to do it, as we explained today in the program, she could pull down the wall, she could break her whole shed down. But she would not harm that person, she would only come and complain to Swami. And Swami would call them out and tell that this is wrong. Here Swami is saying that elephant does not know its strength. But here was a different example altogether, where, you know, this elephant is believed that my true strength is only Swami.
God. Yeah.
This whole idea of what is in you is what is coming out. That Atma which you truly are, is coming out. And I think the whole crux of any religion, or because you are a doctorate in Buddhism and you are here with us, and we have heard so much about the Buddhist way of meditation.
Yeah.
I suppose it is mainly to calm the mind and eliminate the mind.
Exactly.
But what exactly is the Buddhist form of meditation? Like, we have heard so much about it. And does it lead you to the awareness that you are Atma?
In the first instance, you know, when Lord Buddha was teaching, he said it's very simple. Living a spiritual life is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like Swami tells us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's reminiscent of the way Buddha would have taught.
Okay.
He said, the first rule, thumb rule is, don't commit sin. In Tibetan, we just recite it like this, Dikpa thamche michate, geva phinsum chokparche. You don't commit sin, and then you do lot of sukriti. Then you sublimate the mind, and then you become the Buddha. Just these four principles, he said. So sublimating the mind. Swami also taught us once. He said, you cannot control the mind, because the mind doesn't exist. It's a mental construction. It's only an imagination. And then you have got desires and the mind gets constructed. So how can you just say that I'm going to control the mind? Then he gave an example of a sponge. He said, as long as you keep it pressed, then it stays there.
Correct.
But the moment you release it, it springs up. So you cannot. So don't try to meddle with the mind and the senses.
Correct.
But then try to sublimate it, Swami said. So whole of meditation is only to sublimate the mind, to see the other dimension and beyond dimension, like, you know, go beyond that.
Okay.
So
the entire meditation is based on that.
Just based on that and nothing more.
Wow.
Not killing the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the rudest, most stupid thing to say that I am killing my mind. You can't kill the
you
mind.
You can't kill the mind.
Yeah.
Correct.
So Swami said, if you don't have a mind, you will go to a mental asylum. You become pitchy.
That's true.
That state of mindlessness is the state of being sublime.
Mm.
Wherein you are nothing. You are just, you are that.
Correct.
Tattvamasi.
But how did it feel when Swami was revealing some things like this to you, sir? Did you feel that this is like Buddhist knowledge and this is coming from Swami?
No, we never felt very special. Coming from Bhagwan, like it never sounds like a Buddhistic or a Christian type or a Muslim type, because it's the universal whole, the entire truth, holistic truth that Swami is speaking there. And in such a natural and casual manner that everyone has to understand, accept it. And because it is so logical, he makes it, just brings it down to those logical ends, and then he breaks it down and says that you accept it. And you have to. When he said that a cry of a baby is so universal, it's only the upadhis are added later on when you start becoming too clever. So when you feel that when the intellect starts working, you become very intelligent. So till that time, when you are a newborn baby, whether it's a Chinese baby or Christian, Japanese baby or whatever, the cry is the same. So Swami said, no upadhi. Don't brand yourself, Swami keeps telling. In fact, once I still remember, Swami said, you have to unbrand yourself. Till from birth till death, we are so badly branded, I believe, according to Swami, that you don't recognize yourself later on. That should not happen.
Thinking of this, the actual nature of everybody being the Atman, in one of the ways in which it is expressed is unity. Is in the way that everybody is singing together or being together or doing something together. And that's one thing which really, fascinated me, the interest with which Swami would watch a march past, for example.
Yeah.
Because he says everybody is going together. There is some sort of an unity. And everybody, and I think that's why Swami said unity is strength, unity in diversity. And sing Dvandva Titam.
Yeah.
He's talking about the attributes. Oh, you can't say it's attributeless, but what it is expressed, dvandvatitam, it's beyond duality.
Yeah.
And that beyond duality and that unity is so beautifully brought out in many of the things, like you are singing bhajans together.
Yeah.
And Swami says, the moment you all come together, the collective prayer immediately touches his heart.
Really?
So, that's what Swami showed us. When your collective offering, it automatically touches his heart. And
very true. One of the discussions which we had, we were telling that if you were to make a tabular column, and put all the good qualities, what we call good qualities, on the left side, and all the bad qualities on the right side, you would see that all the good qualities, be it kindness, compassion, empathy, sympathy, love, kindness, everything else, it all stems from oneness. You cannot feel compassion for somebody if you don't feel that oneness.
Correct.
And on the other hand, fear, jealousy, anger, hatred, all comes from this very strong sense of duality.
Correct.
This person is going to affect me. This person is going to hurt me. I have something. I don't have something which he has. Everything comes from a very strong sense of duality. So without a knowledge, because Swami is saying, I've never heard Swami tell this, Advaitanandam, Swami says. Nityanandam, Brahmanandam, Advaitanandam. Swami is saying, you're already feeling that joy. It is there in you. That feeling of non-dual joy, bliss, is already felt within you, but you're not acknowledging it and you're not going after it. Or you're not associating yourself with that. Anandam.
Yeah.
So I think that more or less covers what Swami has spoken in this clip. But again, drawing attention to that beautiful way in which Swami sang that Padyam.
Yeah.
And so Swami is the lord of music. Anything just comes, he has to just will and it is there.
Yeah.
So beautiful and dvandva titam, the way he went, sak sarvadi sakshibhutam, he went low there. So inspiring, like
so, inspiring.
So sarvadi sakshibhutam, as if, you know, in that, in the way Swami sang it also, it was so beautiful. He is just the witness.
No doubt.
So I think we've come to the end of almost 1 hour. The other clip might take us a little too, make the program too long, so I think we'll conclude with this. So it was wonderful having you, and we are hoping that this will not be the last time.
What a privilege it is to come be here, you can't imagine.
Definitely, sir. So
I feel just now.
We really hope that you'll join us again in this discourse, maybe next week. We will leave it to you, and we'll leave it as a prayer to Swami that you be with us.
Thank you so much.
So on behalf of you, sir, and on behalf of Sai Prakash and myself, dear listeners, we thank you all for being with us, joining us on this program, and we offer this program at Swami's Lotus Feet. Because of the extended session in the Mandir, we have had to cut out one segment of our Thursday live. So this segment, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, will be the last segment for today. We won't be having the last segment as usual, outside, inside, deep inside. We'll conclude our Thursday live program with this segment and with this offering. Join us again next week on Thursday, starting with our Sunrise with Sai segment. Till then, from all members of Team Radio Sai, we thank you all for your company. Jai Sai Ram.